So the first trend that has already influenced many industries is the IP specifically. What I mean by IP is if you look at traditional way of transmitting any type of data, the normal method is to create a dedicated communication channel between a point A and a point B, where the channel is completely 100% dedicated during the transmission and during no transmission. A good example of this is what's called the circuit-switched networks. And if you're familiar with the ISDN networks, that's a very good example of that. You have that circuitry set up for your purpose, and during that period where you are transmitting or not using that link, that resource is solely dedicated for you. On the contrary, if you look at packet-switched networks, what I mean by that is instead of having a dedicated channel between two points, you create a medium where multiple resources can be utilizing the same channel, possibly at different times or possibly simultaneously, because they are not using the channel 100% of the time, but they are transmitting intermittently, such as the internet. The best example of that would be the internet, where the connections between any router is shared between many, many users at different times. And the main reason this has been a big driver is pretty obvious, because you are getting much better utilization out of the same resource. Let it be a wired resource, let it be a cellular frequency, whatever that might be. And this already affected, for example, audio applications already in the last, I would say, 15, 20 years. If you look at the phone networks, where initially everything was circuit switched, which was basically dedicated, and actually earlier the switching was manually done. And then slowly but surely, starting from the core of the network, where the traffic is carried in higher bandwidths, the technology started switching from circuit switch to packet switch, which really means based on IP. IP is really one of the forms of packet switching. There are other forms, but IP is the clear winner of packet switch networks. And slowly that technology started to spread out towards the edge. And today, you can even get the IP packet technology on telephones at the very end, which is going to be your VoIP phone. It's not just the Skypes or the Messengers. It's literally your office phone, which runs a VoIP network behind it, using IP-based networks to communicate from point A to point B. Another industry, I think, where this transition can be observed is the radio space. Although it's still at the, I think, very early stages of it, the transmission has been moving towards or started to show its face in the packet switch network, where the radios can be now transmitted over the internet. For example, there are new cars coming to the market where you can plug in. It comes already built in with a USB stick where you can plug in your phone and power up your internet radio, Pandora or any of these up-and-coming services, and start getting an IP-based service to the vehicle. And if we look at the video space, so since this is such a core and powerful driver, it's not that difficult to project the same type of effects happening on the video. And if you look at on the consumption side, not necessarily the sourcing side, that already has been happening. If you look at, for example, AT&T's U-verse technology, which is based on IP, even to the last hop. Basically, they are using VDSL2 technology coming from the node, delivering the video, even the live feeds, to the home users. Of course, there are other technologies such as Hulu, Netflix. NCAA tournament last year was broadcast live over the internet. You can pretty much watch in real time every single game that was played. And if you look at the long tail of the content, where by that term I mean the smaller audience and very targeted content, it's already happening on the packet switch networks, because getting it onto the broadcast medium is very costly because they don't have the number of viewers that can support it. So on the consumption side, we're already seeing a packet switched based technology getting into our daily lives of consuming video. And if you look at some other supporting technologies which enable using packet switch networks to deliver video, such as the compression technologies, such as H.264, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, those have been very successful in the recent years as well. So you can really compress the video to a small kilobits per second rate and not lose that much quality, which of course will make the transition easier. And I believe that was the primary reason video has been the last one to get affected, because in voice and radio, you're talking about much less bandwidth, and we needed to wait until 3G, 4G type faster technologies to enable us to transmit video. The other trend, which I believe is affecting many industries, and there are some it already affected strongly, is the immediate access from anywhere concept. And but what I mean by this is the end users, the consumers, are getting so much used to being able to access what they need, what they're looking for, what they're searching for in an instance. This is in all different spaces. For example, if you even look at Google's already quick search, these days they introduced a new technology where before even you finish typing, it starts pulling the results and presenting it to you. So I believe it's a very strong trend in terms of consumers getting used to and expecting that from anything they consume, which really can be translated into zero wait time. They want to get access immediately. It happens, if you look at the print industry, it started with news alerts. We wanted to learn about something happening as quickly as possible, so we were getting email news. Then it became RSS feeds, which we subscribed to. It was quicker and it was updating very, very frequently. Then blogs came along, and now it's a huge race between bloggers to report first, and whoever reports first gets the gold medal, so to speak, and delivers the content to the end user. Same thing is happening in the social media as well. Especially the new generation is completely getting brought up with all those expectations, where they want to know what their friends are doing. If something is happening, they want to learn immediately about it. So the question is, how about in terms of news video, where time is, by almost definition, very, very critical. In terms, let it be sharing of the video, or providing it through social media or through web or whatever delivery system that might be, are we going to get to that point when something is happening? Can we deliver that news, event, whatever that might be, to the end users immediately? The other trend that has affected, this is the third trend, third and final trend I'll mention, that has affected, I think, different industries and is going to affect at a certain level the video delivery industry as well, is the power of numbers, crowdsourcing. And some of the successful examples are Wikipedia, where basically the content of an encyclopedia is produced by end users. So a lot of people are contributing and creating the real content. Another very successful example is, although in terms of end users, we may not know how successful Linux as an operating system is, but if you're in the enterprise space, if you're dealing with servers, you know more than 80% of servers are Apache-based, which is Linux. So it's a clear winner in major areas, which is also a completely open source, which is crowdsourced development of an operating system. As complex as that might be, it was successful. Social networks is yet another example where the whole content is produced by the end users and curated basically to the consumption of other users. If we wanted to look at one specific industry, which the newspaper print media example, we have seen the crowdsourced new approaches really not overtaking it, but significantly affecting how the industry works. For example, with AOL's recent acquisition of Huffington Post, which was nothing more than crowdsourced newspaper where the contributors were individual freelancers, basically. Or on the Yellow Pages side, if you look at Craigslist, which is again a crowdsourced content generation where the content is similar to Yellow Pages at that level, has been overtaking the print media. So there is definitely power in crowdsourcing. If you're tabbing into larger numbers, that gives you an advantage. And how about in news gathering, where being local, being close to the event, time to deliver the content is so important. Is there any way the TV stations can tab into these larger number of users, and not necessarily the individual consumers, but maybe a larger network of video sources that can produce content for them? So my projection about all these three questions is the news video delivery systems will be based on IP. I think there is no question in my mind that will happen. It's basic economics. I mean, it might take some time, but if you're doing something cheaper, if you're doing something better, more effectively, it's bound to happen. So it's. I think that is one of the trends we will see in how the video is delivered, how the video is sourced, from where the news is happening, all the way to the point where it's consumed. And it may not just be your TV, where the TV and PC are really coming, merging together, so the lines are blurring. But whatever method the consumption might be, I think it's going to be all the way based on IP. Immediate sourcing of the content is, I think, very powerful as well, because it gives a clear advantage and provides a pretty attractive value proposition for someone providing that. And we, even though I can't get into specifics, I know with some of our projects with clients, there are major corporations working on some initiatives in this space, which naturally translates into how do you achieve that sourcing from anywhere. You obviously cannot have individuals everywhere, so what would be the way of achieving that? And I put the word crowd in quotations, because I think this might take different forms, where there might be news gathering individuals which do this as a business, but they might be freelancers, where a TV station might have 5 times, 10 times, maybe 100 times more individuals to tap into for immediate video sourcing. And of course, that naturally provides almost like a positive side effect, which is the power of local. If you're the closer you are to the local news or what's happening, of course, the better chances that you're hearing it first and delivering it first. And if you look at all these trends, which by definition require certain economics that needs to be built in into the technology, meaning, If you want to have that many reporters out there, or if you want to be able to provide that over IP, you cannot afford certain type of technologies for every individual reporter. So my claim is, over time, we will start to see satellite and microwave-based technologies becoming too expensive to support these upcoming trends. I don't think this is a either-or type of a question. I think what will happen over time is the new technologies and the existing technologies will fall into their particular niches, where satellite, microwave, it will always have their place, even 10 years from now. But I think it will be very well-defined and specific, where the cheaper and more effective technologies might start to provide video where sometimes satellite can't. And what I mean by the new technologies very specifically is instead of using a satellite connection or using a microwave link, utilizing the 3G, 4G networks that are built in your cell phones. The same type of technology, which is terrestrial, so you're not going all the way to the space, you're communicating with the base station, which is within a certain distance from you, and using that IP network, which is already based on IP, to deliver video content from where the video is happening to wherever the video sync or video destination might be. This could be directly to the video, to a website. This could be to the newsroom headquarters, plugging back into the video router the TV station might have. But it's basically utilizing the existing, and for 4G in US, I should say, up and coming, 4G technologies to utilize this. And here I have an example unit just to give you a pictorial idea of how these technologies might look. This is a device, and in terms of putting it into perspective in terms of size, we have a Anton Bauer battery plate on top. So it's fairly small in terms of a unit, and it weighs less than 4.4 pounds. And this device has the capability of utilizing cellular networks to transmit a video signal, such as on an SDI, SDSDI, HDSDI, or analog HDMI inputs, and utilizing the 3G, 4G networks to transmit it to a receiver unit. So going back to the picture, there would be a transmit side, and there would be a receive side, which is the one new pizza box at the lower end to deliver the video. So it's basically, I tend to stay away from the term replacement or alternative, because I think these are going to be complementary technologies. But in terms of describing what it is, I think it's a nice way of making the transition. You can imagine those smaller boxes coming into the market. And by the way, I'm talking about the technology that my company developed, but there are other companies, more than 10, 15 actually, that came to market in the last 12 months. So there will be other similar technologies, but the overall concept is very similar, where you utilize the 3G, 4G networks in that already exists. So what are the challenges? If everything is so rosy, everything is so much cheaper, easier, quicker, why don't we see satellites replaced overnight? It's simply because the new technology, as all technologies do, have some challenges that it needs to address. I would call the technology at the very early stages, but I think today, for example, we have professional clients who have been utilizing the technology to deliver live video. So it's definitely getting there. And some of the challenges that one might raise immediately is video quality. What is the video quality that can be achieved with these type of technologies today? So that's definitely one important critical question I'm asking here and will answer shortly. The second important metric is, since you're utilizing a different transport, which is not necessarily designed for video delivery, what is the glass-to-glass latency you can achieve for news reporting, which is obviously very important, and we've seen it with satellite as well. The latencies were higher years ago, and they improved, so I believe the same type of paradigm is happening in the 3G, 4G space as well. Related, jitter, if you're dealing with cellular networks, jitter is a big issue in terms of a technical hurdle. What is the situation there, and can that be addressed? And reliability. In terms of satellite, if you can see the sky, you have a communication channel. In terms of cellular, if you go into a basement of a building, all of a sudden, if you don't have your cell phone coverage, you don't have the connectivity to the system. Or if you are in a location where you are switching base station towers, either with a hard handoff or a soft handoff, you will be momentarily losing your connection. It's very similar to losing your call while you're driving on the highway in the middle of your phone conversation. So what is the reliability level? What can be achieved with this technology today and maybe 12 to 18 months down the road? When you look at video quality combined with the new compression technologies as well as up-converting technologies, it is possible to do 1080p video quality. Of course, anything below that 1080i, 720p, and D1 can be accomplished today. So I don't see this as an outstanding hurdle. This is pretty much addressed today. In terms of glass-to-glass latency, today what can be achieved with systems is around 2 seconds. I put a check mark. I think this still needs to be improved. This is one of the aspects of the technology that still has some room to improve. But I think when you get to the 2 second level, you can get to that interactivity level and do a conversation with the field. So it's definitely, I think, deserves a check mark, although 1 second there would be much nicer. And in terms of jitter and reliability, I'm not going to go into the details of the technology, but there are technologies that we utilize, for example, that completely addresses this. And I'm going to present some third-party studies and statistics to put some numbers on these aspects. So the key thing, if you look at today's technology, and if you even projecting into the future, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, 6G, whatever the next generation might be, there are really two challenges in cellular networks. One is the bandwidth you can get, so how many bits you can get across with that given technology. And the second one is the reliability aspect. How reliably can you transmit those bits? You might be just right next to a base station, then everything is fantastic. You're getting the rates that the carriers are advertising. But if you're inside a building or far from the base station, what is the reliability? So those two, primary challenges within the cellular networks will be there irrespective of the generation of the technology because of the what's called the fast and slow fading of the RF channels. The reliability will be always there even if you move to the next generation. But there is an intelligent way of addressing that problem, and that really relies on the simple concept of putting eggs into more than one basket. If you have four or five carriers, and if you have four or five of these super cheap IP channels, why not utilize all of them intelligently to create out of these semi-unreliable channels, why not create a predictable, very reliable channel out of these relatively slower IP pipes? Why not bring them together and create a faster channel that can serve the purpose, which is basically delivering reliably with a low latency, high quality video. And that's what the new technology is really all about. The broadband bonding, it's called, and you can bring in any type of cellular connection from AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, whatever technology you have, and intelligently bond them together into a single IP connection, which has all those desired characteristics. And to summarize that part, it's really bringing, in this case, I'm giving an example with four cellular channels, four unreliable and unpredictable channels, and by bonding them together, you create a reliable and predictable channel, which is now good for ENG applications. To put some numbers on these facts, this is a study done by a third party where the dots on the map represent dead zones on networks, on cellular networks. So as you can see, there is a huge area And these are different carriers. Different carriers have different dead zones in different regions in the United States. But it's a significant area where you may not get coverage from an individual carrier. This is a similar study for the Los Angeles area in specific, zoomed in a little bit more. But as you can see, it's a pretty dense collection of dots where there are dead zones of cellular carriers. This is again another study that has been done by a third party where they went out in different cities and have tested the upload and download speeds of different carriers, namely AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, and Verizon. Not only that, they also looked at the reliability. The reliability being defined the percentage of their 1 minute performance test during which the service was available. So if it wasn't, they marked it as unreliable for that test point. So as you can see, the reliability levels per card can be pretty low, lower than 80% on an individual basis. So that's primarily the two reasons why bringing more than one channel to create a bigger pipe makes sense, because using those same numbers, if you use for the same city and experiment, if you bond those together, you get consistently above 500 kilobits per second for any given point, which provides you a good level of video transmission capability. And if you look at, for example, in New Orleans, T-Mobile had only 91 kilobits per second, which is really a terrible rate, but overall it went over 500 as well. Same type of calculation for the reliability aspect. If you think in terms of being disconnected for a system to be disconnected, let's say having four cards, for you to be completely disconnected from the network, all four connections need to be disconnected. And if there is even as high as a 10% chance of one of them being disconnected, if you multiply 0.1 four times in a row, which gives you the chance of you being disconnected, becomes significantly low and you get to a high nines of reliability. And here are some numbers calculated for the four-channel system where you basically get to a pretty reliable level. And if you make it a six-card system, all of a sudden you're talking about six nines reliability. So starting to summarize the comparison of these two technologies, and of course we have to look at in terms of the current state of the technology as well. Even though the CapEx and the operating expense of a satellite truck might be high compared to a system which basically attaches at the end of a broadcast camera and you can transmit live video, one needs to take into consideration the sunken cost in those systems. Especially on the microwave side, there are already paid for licenses and already paid for systems in place. So those are some of the advantages of the legacy ENG systems. But if you compare in terms of time to live, obviously the smaller system will have the advantage of being able to go live in a very short period of time. And by the sheer fact of being costly, you can only have a certain density of ENG trucks in any given city. You cannot distribute ENG trucks to every single reporter, which you can do with a very low-cost equipment, which every reporter can have and go live in a matter of minutes. Mobility is another aspect of it. We haven't seen much live video transmissions other than some very high profile, perhaps car chases from a helicopter or things like that. But with this type of a mobility, the reporter can be either in a vehicle or outside of a vehicle in the middle of a big protest or something like that. As long as he can move, the video can move with them. So it gives a huge flexibility in terms of mobility that the system can sustain. And of course, size, which relates into many of the above aspects as well, is an advantage. With a small, light unit, you can do things faster and better. What are the advantages of the ENG systems of today compared to the cellular-based ENG trucks? As I mentioned, the quality-wise 1080p quality has the capability, but of course you can not match today the quality of a satellite truck. So there is definitely an advantage of ENG truck really having the highest end quality in terms of video. I think over time this will change because the technology is improving very, very fast, and the 3G, 4G networks are improving very, very fast. And it's really a matter of how many kilobits per second you can transmit to get to the same type of quality. But today, 1080p, which is going through an up conversion, so it's not really true 1080p, but can be achieved. Latency, as I mentioned earlier, is a big advantage on the traditional ENG truck side. Today, you cannot really get below 2 second latency on a cellular-based ENG system reliably. Of course, if you're lucky, if you're right next to the base station, you can get to 1 second, but the 2 second I mentioned here is every time getting it reliably. And of course, the advantage, not necessarily advantage, but one reason the ENG trucks will be with us for a long time is the sunk investment that's already in the systems. And therefore, I think the transition will happen over time. And the example I like to give is, for example, in a sporting event, the main event will be televised through the satellite systems. But perhaps the supplementary videos, which might be delivered either through the usual television system or maybe on the website where the cellular ENG system or many of them are on the bus carrying the players to the stadium, in the pregame show, going into the crowd, talking with the players on the sideline. So I think it's really a complementary system which will change how live video is going to be delivered in the next several years. Coming to the end of my presentation here, I wanted to briefly touch on some of the other applications outside of broadcasting this technology is going to impact. And I believe this is very, very important, because if you have the supporting trust factors from many, many industries, it moves the technology so much quicker, so much faster in front. And as a matter of fact, our very early clients have been in the government and government agencies and the DoD space. So that's definitely a big driver, I think, for the technology overall. But you can imagine applications such as smaller localized events. For example, a small rock band trying to get to their audience cannot afford being on TV because they are not that popular, perhaps, can utilize a system like this easily. Actually, we have artists doing the very same thing with our equipment. Video surveillance, which is another application for this technology, we're seeing this as well, where sometimes having a wired connection to a specific point might not be feasible. Or the video surveillance point might be mobile or portable. And in these type of situations, this technology is one of the best alternatives. Emergency response is another one. Imagine the expert doctor in that space can be reached immediately as the patient is being carried to the hospital, and with a live feed, being able to interact with the patient and perhaps saving lives at that time. Unmanned vehicles is another application where you can not only get live video feeds, but use that same reliable channel to control and manage that unmanned vehicle where it might be dangerous to have people. In similarly, covert operations, wherever you don't want to send individuals but have machines doing it, and having the intelligence or the smart eye being in the command and control center, seeing the video as if he is there and controlling the system, is already happening. And at this time, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions. I put my contact information up here as well. Anyone who is interested in some of the slides where I had some numbers up there, I'll be more than happy to share. Just let me know. Thank you so much.
Have you done any studies to determine how much that the cellular system's reliability goes down at an event where there are a lot of people present, like at a sporting event?
Yep, that's a very good point. Actually, it is an issue, and it probably should have been in my slide as well. However, there are methods where you can utilize the network which is optimized for the video delivery transport. And for example, we're using a proprietary technology where you can utilize and basically wiggle among already existing network traffic. But it is a challenge, and the net effect is almost like a slow fading effect, which is already in systems where you can drop in terms of reception and get less of a bandwidth. And the way the systems are, I can talk for our system, coping with that is having a dynamic encoding rate adjustment. So let's say if your bandwidth goes lower, you basically send lower quality video. But you do that dynamically so that if you do have capacity, you can transmit with the high quality. And even, for example, in scenarios where we've seen, and we had actually live transmits from very crowded locations, what happens is you really are leveraging the lower quality transmission with the up conversion at most in those type of situations. So rather than transmitting 1080p, you, for example, transmit with D1, which is much lower bandwidth, but at the receive side, you upconvert to, let's say, 1080, if that's what's desired. But that's a very valid challenge that's happening. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.